friends, and welcome to your Monday edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. I hope your weekended well, got a chance to enjoy the sun. Fittingly now, it's pissing it down. It's just been like a bloody storm outside the window here at Heath Towers. But I'd rather it be that, friends, than rain over the weekend. Speaking of rain, here's our very own little bit of sunshine. He was away last week, and I'm very excited to welcome him back. The Dr. Stuart Watson, the veteran leader in our dressing room, our Brian Robson, our Roy Keane, our Luke Chambers. How are you feeling, mate?
Less of the veteran. Thank you very much.
You are very much a veteran, I'm afraid, old boy.
Yeah. I'm good, thank you. I'm good.
Tell us what you were up to last week. You were on holiday, weren't you? Half term.
I was, yeah. Had a bit of family time. Went up to North Yorkshire, Durham, all around that area. A few little Airbnbs. A bit of crabbing at Whitby.
Oh, yeah. Have they still got the whale, the whale jawbone at Whitby? I seem to remember, because I used to live there when I was a kid, around there. Okay. Best fish and chips I've ever had, I think, Whitby.
I can't remember the whale jawbone, I have to be honest. But yeah, okay. I've had a nice little break, thank you. It's very nice.
And we've missed you, friend. And it's great to have you back. And obviously, you went straight back into covering the EFL Awards last night, which we'll go on to in due course, because you've got some interesting stuff from that. Right then, friends, we've obviously got AJ and Rossi with us, and we're going to start now by talking about the Middlesbrough game. 1-1, chance missed or a vital point. There's a conversation we're going to be having. I want to start, first of all, though, by asking you, AJ, how are you feeling? Because it was an odd one. A lot of fans coming out of the game on Saturday, saying they're feeling frustrated, nay, disappointed, despite the fact that Town had just gone top of the table. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm worried because of the aforementioned storm that seemingly knocked my Wi-Fi into oblivion, so I'm hotspotting for this pod. Wish me luck. In terms of Saturday's game, yeah, it was a really strange one to reflect on because everything had fallen into place in the build-up. They'd obviously had Leicester lose the night before. Nobody really expected that. Leeds losing at lunchtime, absolutely no one expected that. I was certain Blackburn would get trounced. And then the opportunity's there, but you know that Middlesbrough, probably of the teams that the top three had to play, Middlesbrough was probably the hardest game. And when you reflect on the game as well, a draw is absolutely fair result in my eyes. I think that was absolutely spot on based on the flow of the match, based on the chances, based on, Town probably having the better of them, but Borough having one or two late on to definitely kill it off if they were a little bit more clinical or didn't have a wall to try and get through in the Town goal. So it's trying to balance out those feelings a little bit. On the day, you sat there feeling a little bit frustrated at halftime. I was thinking if they win this, they could almost be there if other results go their way. I think I said on Saturday it might have required Leeds losing two. I forgot about Southampton, actually. But if Leeds and Southampton had slipped up in the next kind of few days, it could have almost been done. So having it not be like that is a bit of a kick, but then you have time to reflect. And I think that the general vibe and general feeling, as I tried to put on Twitter as well, was pretty positive. They're still in the same position as they were a week before the game, and now they've only got three left to play.
Rossi, how are you feeling after the game? Because on the face of it, Borough coming in, side in good form, now unbeaten in 9 games. Striker also in good form, obviously he scored. So on the face of it, not the worst result, but I guess because of results elsewhere and what a win could have done, there's also an argument that it was a bit deflating, which sounds odd. How are you feeling? How are you feeling?
I'm all right, to be fair.
Of course you are.
Always, you know me. Yeah, there was, of course, a lot of frustration maybe after the game, but then also a bit of reality check. We are top of the league in the Championship when last year we were in League One, obviously fighting for promotion. But yeah, I think, actually, we'll get onto it in a bit, but we were lucky to win the game if it wasn't for Vaz. So
we didn't win. It was a draw.
Yeah. I mean lose. Yeah. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just, what a ride we're on, ladies and gentlemen. Just enjoy the journey. You know, it's a roller coaster, isn't it? And we're at a little stop here, haven't we? And a little disappointing little last three games, maybe, in terms of dropping points and that. There's that chance there. But no, I'm fine, as Sarah Ramsey would say.
I'm fine. Right, I'm going to play Kieran McKenna now talking about performance. Then we're going to talk about it in more depth. And Watson is going to play the role of co-host in this particular section because I'm sure he's got questions about Borough having not been there in person. So let's hear from Kieran first of all.
Some frustration from that result and another good performance against a really good team.
Yeah, I think frustration isn't my feeling at the moment. Maybe it will be tomorrow, but at the moment, look, it's pride around the performance. I thought it was a brilliant game. I thought the performance was excellent against a good side. And I was really proud of how we went about our business, really. I thought we played brave, we played confident. Tactically, it was a really good battle. We created plenty of chances to win the game. And I thought it was a really good performance. So, yeah, look, over the course of the last two games, could we have had an extra couple of points? For sure. Could we have lost today? Vaz produces a great save at the end, possibly. The players are giving everything, and what's more pleasing for me is the performance. At the end of the season, we'll get how many points that we'll get. I don't think they're going to leave an ounce of effort out there. I really like how we went about our business, and at the end of the day, we pick up a point from a really good performance, and we've got a little bit of recovery now, and then we can look forward to the last week and three great games.
Okay, right. So what we're going to do, I'm going to ask AJ to kick us off with his opening thoughts. Start wherever you want, and then let's just open the floor, Watto. So dive in as and when. And let's just have a bit of a round table chat around this game, shall we? So go on then, AJ, kick us off. Try and keep it to less than 15 minutes. And then we'll see where we go.
We have a whole day, Mark. We can fill this as long as you want. I suggest we have at least an hour monologue each.
Yeah.
I thought that Town's approach to this was pretty good, considering what had happened in the previous games. Obviously, they'd lost at Norwich on the Saturday, and then had the Watford game, which we might as well briefly touch on. It was a 0-0. They had chances to win it. They didn't. And Watford defended very, very well. That's pretty much all you need to say. And then from there, I thought they attacked this game quite well, which maybe given some of the nerves they could have had around it, I was really impressed by. They started fast. They created a lot of space and worked into it quite well, just maybe struggling to pull the trigger. You could feel maybe that they were growing into it a little bit, starting to turn the screw. And it felt a lot more like the Town, I don't want to say the Town of old, but some of the Town games that we have seen earlier in the season, when you think back to maybe the November-December games, for example. But everyone knew the threat that Middlesbrough posed, especially on the counter, and actually was probably their first spell of possession that led to the opener. And it's just one moment where they switch off, I'd say. A little bit too much space for Luke Ayling to get the cross in, and then Latilath gets in between two defenders to fire a low header in. So a frustrating one, but I'm pleased with how they started it. It's just one of those where you're then having to then think about coming from behind again, overcoming those difficulties, and they're so good at doing that. But when it is in these kind of situations and these circumstances of the real run-in and the fact they hadn't really scored too much they hadn't scored at all in the last couple of games, it felt maybe a little bit harder to do.
Yeah, so 1-0 down, again, having to show that resilience.
Yeah.
Oh, are we losing Ukraine? Alex, are you going? Are you still with us?
Can we hear me?
Yep.
I'm here.
I've got you.
Is my hotspot holding up?
Just about. Right. You look like you're in a snowstorm, but that's fine. As long as we can hear you.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, 1-0 down then. Got to show that resilience again. And duly they do, Rossi. Leif Davis with his 17th assist. 17th assist of the season. Mental. And a nice tidy little finish from Luongo as well.
Off the crossbar. Boom. Flying Massimo Luongo. Love that. But, yeah, Leif Davis. That's just, it's unbelievable. As we will get onto later, worthy to be in a team of the season. But yeah, I think that was a nice little relief moment where I was like, okay, yeah, got the equaliser. And, you know, obviously we could have, actually before Borough scored, we could have had a few goals. Like Sarmiento, little tap around the goalie, hits the post. On another day, that would have gone in. It's basically like the Nathan Broadhead chance, I think, was against Watford.
Watford, yeah.
So I think just a little bit of relief because obviously Borough, you know, could have made it 2-0 as well themselves. But yeah, a worthy equaliser.
I guess we should ask you, AJ, as a self-confessed Ali Alhamadi fan, this was his first start for Town. How did he do you think? Because you spoke to Kieran about that after the game as well, didn't you? So clearly one of the talking points around the match was seeing Ali from the start for the first time.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised because I, in my head, I had it as this idea that he'd probably play the Watford game, and then you could see what the thinking with Kieran McKenna was, where he didn't want him to come up against three very tall centre-backs, and there was a little bit more space to play with going into this one. A game where he could maybe use his pace and his energy, and I think it was hard just because Borough are a good team more than anything, and they have very experienced defenders in that area. I think they limited him to two shots in the hour that he was on the pitch, but I think that he offers something else, as we kind of touched on before, in terms of his movement, in terms of dragging players out of position. You can prepare quite well for coming up against Kiefer Moore, but Ali Alhamadi, I feel, in a sense, is harder to prepare to face. And there was maybe that sense that it then opened up space for the likes of Amari Hutchinson to get in some good places, for Connor Chaplin to kind of dictate play a little bit more through the middle, things like that. And I think that that worked quite well. So for a first start, really impressive. There'll be more to come from him in terms of being a threat in the box, but the way that he linked up from the start for an hour on the pitch, I thought was really, really good.
Excellent. We are definitely going to lose you at some point, AJ. You are hanging by the thread, I reckon, on the old connection there. Stewie, I don't want you to sit there looking pretty without saying anything. Looking muscular, if you don't mind me saying. do you want to jump in with a thought or a question?
generic question. Atmosphere at Portman Road these last two games. How was it, gents? Is it nervy? Is it supportive? Is it a mixture of both? How's it felt inside the ground for these last two games?
I'll have to jump in because AJ's froze, so I'll have to come in here. Obviously, every start of every game, there's always that atmosphere in there because, you know, players coming out and all that. There's no fire because obviously it's the afternoon and you're not going to have fire in the afternoon. But obviously, when Borough went ahead, it went a bit flat, and obviously the nerves kick in because obviously we all knew what happened Friday night. Everyone knew what happened at lunchtime with Leeds. So obviously it was like, we could go top of the table. We could be 2 points clear if we won. Something like that. AJ, maths, you know the maths. If we won, would have been 2 points.
It would have been 2 points clear of Leicester, would have had a game in hand, and it would have been 4 points clear, pretty much full stop, of Leeds, which would have been a very nice buffer to have. Also, hello, I've switched back to Wi-Fi, so hopefully I'm now not like one of these Eurovision presenters where there's like a little break and you then hear 12 points, France. Yeah, hopefully we're okay now.
Yes, indeed so. Right then, friends, I've got things written down which I want to talk about. So pick one of these, AJ, and talk about it. I've got Hladky, obviously. I've got Sarmiento, his best game as a starter, ? I've got Amari, obviously, because he's been absolute flames last couple of games. And I've also got the aforementioned Leif Davis, bracket 17 in my notes. Which of those would you like to take and run with?
I feel like this has to be the opportunity to bring Laz into this one.
Yes.
As the big talking point. Let's get it out of the way first. I thought he dealt with this game really, really well. I think that let's get the one maybe slight blemish on this game that he had out of the way. The ball comes back to him for the opener, and I don't think he's in a position to take it on. It's not an easy one for him. His kick's a little bit short, and that's really what allows Borough to regain possession ahead of the opening goal. But from there on, two bits to point out. Firstly, his distribution was excellent. Borough press high with their attackers, real intense press. But he was just so, so good. Really press resistant in tight areas, playing well with the defenders. So that's the first bit. And then the saves. And there were four that he made in total in this game. The first couple were fairly standard ones, but the bit that stands out is obviously around the 80th minute, where the nerves are probably starting to settle in a little bit. Town want to win it. Borough are threatening on the counter. It's a kick out from the back. It might actually have been a goal kick that bounces. Luke Wolfenden misjudges it, bounces over him. He tries to foul Lasse Laff as he's on the ground, like scrambling to bring him down. Doesn't quite happen. Lasse Laff sets up Isaiah Jones, who's pretty much in a one-on-one position at that point, and it's a brilliant, brilliant low save to keep it out. And then Borough recycle it again. Lands on the head of Clark, who seems destined to mark his return to Portman Road. I don't know if it is his first one. Ross can confirmed with that one, but Marks has returned to Portman Road. Yeah, his first one. With a goal point blank, looks like it's just going to rifle kind of very central into the goal. And Vaz somehow has the reactions to tip it up. It kind of flicks up onto the crossbar and out. The power that Clark gets behind the header is really, really impressive here. So to keep that out, I was kind of sat in the press box doing one of these, hands on your heads, thinking, how on earth has he kept that out? It was the chance of the game. It was the chance to kill the game. Well, probably to have killed the game, you would have said, and to swing 3 points the other way. This is someone who's had a catalogue of amazing moments and amazing saves this season. Given that Town didn't win it, it might not end up making the top maybe two or three at the end of the season, but this could be a save that defines a promotion campaign if Town go on to do it, because it was absolutely vital and it was just so impressive, unbelievable reactions.
Right, we're going to hear from Vaz now, and then we're going to ask Stuart Watson which was the better of the two saves. So I'm hoping he's seen it. If not, you've got 39 seconds, Watson, to watch them both.
Massive saves, to be honest. I'm not saying this often, but this was really good, and I'm really pleased to save the point, actually. But it's not just me. There were super blocks in the first half as well from the centre-backs, you know. So that's our job, and, you know, one game. It's me, and the other is a different, you know, different lot. So, yeah, obviously, it's a part of the journey, part of the big performance, and sometimes we have to step up and do the thing what we need.
Excellent. Right then, Watto. So, assuming you've seen them, the first one was like a one-on-one style with Isaiah Jones, which obviously we know Vaz excels at that kind of scenario. And then the second one was just pure mental athleticism, reflexes, reaction, all that kind of stuff. So of the two great saves, which would you say was the better one?
Second.
I'd agree. What's your thinking?
My thinking is, I think the Middlesbrough player, who was it, the first one?
Isaiah Jones.
Isaiah Jones.
I think he should probably do a bit better. I was just having a quick rewatch while we played the clip of Vaz there. But take nothing away from the save. He's come out, narrowed the angle, done everything you need to do as a goalkeeper in that scenario. But the second is just, as you say, pure cat-like reflexes, isn't it? Balls change direction quickly. Yeah, as Mr. Mick McCarthy has said many times before, every point's a prisoner, and we don't know how important this point, these last 2 points, could prove to be when the final total is totted up.
Brian Clough once said that a good goalkeeper is worth 12 points a season. And he had, obviously, had Peter Shilton, who was a pretty decent goalkeeper. We'll just forget about what he's done since football.
We've talked a lot about... yeah, gloss over that part. Yeah. We talked a lot about how his value with the ball at his feet and how he's probably been an improvement on Christian Walton in that regard. And perhaps in amongst all that debate, it's kind of got lost how many big saves he's made this season. And if you put together a highlights reel of those, certainly in the early stages of the season, which feels like an absolute lifetime ago now, it felt like he was making, you know, ridiculous 1v1 stops on a weekly basis that secured some big points along the way. So, yeah, if you're talking about that 12-point margin, he's probably good for that this season, if you look back through it, I would say. So, he's right up there in the sort of player of the year conversation for Ipswich Town. For me, certainly being in the top three. I think we had that discussion a few weeks back when we were talking about it. Massive saves.
I'm going to digress here now, but this feels like a good point to talk about it. You spoke to Vaz last week, AJ. One of the things that came up with his contract, says they're in the process of discussing the new contract. Obviously, he's out of contract in the summer, has been linked with Celtic previously, but he confirmed that he wants to stay at Town. How do you see this? Because we've got Christian Walton, who was probably the best keeper in League One last season, the unquestioned number one going into this season. Were it not for that injury, Vaz would not be playing. And now you've got Vaz, who's had this unbelievable season, brings different things to the table, better with the ball at feet, unbelievably athletic shot stopper. How do you see this scenario playing out? Because you can't can you carry two of them? You've got two potential, I mean, obviously depends where they are, but two potential number one keepers there.
It's a very tricky balance to find this because there are so many different things that could play a part in this. If Ipswich Town are a Premier League team at the end of the season, does that play a part? I mean, you could be looking at big name keepers to come in. What happens with Vaz then? What happens with Christian Walton? And if they don't, regardless, the important thing is that Christian Walton needs to play football. He's not played regular football in a year now. I know it's slightly different for goalkeepers where they're maybe not moving quite as much. And the fitness aspect, while important, isn't as important as someone like Leif Davis, who's spending 90 minutes running up and down like he's got Duracell batteries in him. So it's a slightly different one in that perspective, but he's going to want to play and he's going to know his value as well. So it's going to be a difficult position for him to get his way back into the team pretty much. We know that because Vaz has been, I'd say, in my eyes, one of the top three goalkeepers in the division this season. He's going to be in for a shout player of the year. Well, obviously we know that Sam Morsey's won that, but from the fans' perspective, so you're making a top three. I think he'd be in many people's top threes for the player of the year. And he's definitely feeling the love at Ipswich. That makes sense for him to stay here. There's obviously those kind of thoughts. You know, do you want to go to Celtic? He's back up there. Or are there other options there? I think it makes sense for him.
I think we may have lost AJ again. Oh, well. I was going to come to you anyway, Rossi. You got any thoughts on this Lagte-Walton debate? Because clearly that's going to be something we're talking about over the summer.
No, I think at the moment, Vaz is the man. And he's stepped up the championship fantastically. And some of the saves he's made, I don't think Walton would be making. Yeah, it's an interesting one in the summer because Walton probably won't be wanting to play. Oh, he's second fiddle once again. Definitely his age. Obviously, Vaz is a bit older than Walton. He's 32 or 33, Vaz. So
ancient.
Yeah, yeah. But on the different scenario of goalkeepers, they can go until whenever because they're just in goal. But yeah, an interesting situation to have. But yeah, fair play to Vaz. And what a lovely man as well he is. What a lovely man. He's a very, very, very handsome man as well, I have to say. He's got nice, you know, nice little bone structure, nice hair and everything. Yeah, good bloke.
And that's important.
I can't see, just to put a cap on this, I can't see any way that Christian Walton stays on to be a number two goalkeeper for Ipswich Town again. He's out of contract this summer. Ipswich have that 1 year extension option in their favour, which obviously they'll take to protect him as an asset financially. And then I think it will be about extracting sort of maximum value for him. Yes, you could put your foot down and say, you know, you stay, you see out your contract, we want to keep you, but he'll be one of the higher earners, I would have thought. And do you want your backup goalkeeper within the constraints of FFP kind of taking up that chunk of your wage? No. Do you want a player that's not particularly happy behind the scenes? No. Obviously, it's always difficult when you go out to recruit a number two because that's a hard sell, but they'll find the right person, I would have thought. That's the way I see this panning out. And yeah, it's felt for a long time like Vaz is going to sign a contract. I think it's just a case of thrashing that out. But yeah, he's really happy here. And I think he'll stay.
I think Walton will know his value as well. I don't know if this was mentioned while my Wi-Fi died in the storm, but he's someone that was linked with Luton last summer. He'll know that, I mean, there were Premier League clubs that were having that little look at him, and I'd imagine that there was probably something in that. So he'll know that he'll probably have interest, I'd say, at Championship level. The club's looking to make him a first choice, and that just makes total sense, I think, from his perspective, to try and get things back on track after this injury, knowing that if he shows what he's capable of and shows what he's been doing for the last few years, he can get right back to that point where he's been linked with Premier League clubs again.
I thought Cambridge, AJ, was a land of milk and honey, the land of plenty, one of the key seats of learning in this historic, esteemed country. Why can't we have Wi-Fi that works, my friend?
So, for starters, I am considering building an ark at this point because it is really bad weather. Secondly, the thing is, you are right in all these ways, but the thing is that all these people are so keen to learn and develop and access the internet, that when all of them do it at once, especially opposite one of the university colleges, like where I live, it's just terrible. It's a disaster. And Virgin Media will be having a very sternly worded letter very soon from me.
We are trying to put together an industry-leading podcast here, AJ. Can you not just pop over the road and have a word with the dean and say, look, we need an hour. Tell all the students, log off, go and do some reading, old school style.
I could try. However, it's raining and I don't really want to go outside.
Fair enough. Right then, Rossi, I'm coming back to you. I'm on my list of things to talk about, pick your poison, please. I've got Sarmiento, Omari, Leif Davis, or Roscoe's choice. What do you want to talk about?
The cottage pie was lovely.
Oh, excellent.
That was beautiful. That was lovely. I love a bit of cottage pie. But going cottage pie to Jeremy Sarmiento, a nice little segue.
The obvious segue.
Obviously. First start, and we've mentioned before, he's not really been a great starter when he has made a start. But this one, he was lively, boys. He was lively, could have scored. And you know what? I was actually disappointed when he got subbed off. I went, McKenna, normally K-Mac, you do sensible subs. But for me, I think Sarmiento should have stayed on. But he was lively. He was tearing McBurrough's defence a new one, pretty much. Good to see, really, for him to get that start and show what he can do. And I think overall had a good performance and, deserved the goal, really. So, good on Jezza.
And AJ, obviously, we've spoken before about how he's, up to this point anyway, been better as a closer, as a kind of super sub. And clearly that's when he's done some big things. But I saw on your player ratings, you said for you this is best performance from the start of a game.
Yeah, I think so, because most of the times when he has started the games, I can't necessarily think of all of the ones off the top of my head, but we've kind of looked and gone, it doesn't suit him. And I think it's also a thing on circumstances. You look at, I think the Preston game was one of them. They're quite a strong defensive side. There weren't too many gaps to exploit in that first half. And for someone who likes to be that dribbly winger, the dribbliest of dribbly wingers, a nice bit of skill, a nice bit of kind of flashy play, just doesn't really suit him, those kind of games. Where this one, against the Borough team that will want to try and stand toe-to-toe with Town, and did, as I mentioned, those gaps were there, and he could have a little bit more fun. And he's someone that needs to enjoy his football to play well. He needs to have the space to really work with. That's why I think in the latter stages of games, when he's coming on against tired defenders who aren't maybe marking and defending as well, that's where you're seeing the best from him. But in this one, those spaces were there. It was very unfortunate not scoring this one, as Ross mentioned, hit the post with a kind of a little dinked shot that we just thought might have just crept in. Really, really frustrating one. One of those where it's just slowly rolling and everyone gets excited and then it just hits the post and bounces out, gutting. But he had chance other than that. He was setting up teammates. He had the right balance of selfishness and collaboration in terms of playing others into good opportunities. So this was really what he needed as well, more than anything, just because maybe there's been a little bit of a confidence knock, given that he's been the super sub and Town need the whole squad to participate. And he's now shown with this game, hopefully at least, that he can be someone that can be involved from the start of games.
And just a little pause for appreciation on Omari as well, AJ. I thought he was brilliant against Watford. Clearly the man of the match for me. And again, he looked like he was at his dazzling best in this game as well. He's so exhilarating, isn't he, when he's got the ball at feet. So much talent that he's got. And it's great to see him bringing it out, because he had a really strong period where he's doing all sorts of good things. And he kind of went a little bit quiet as he started games. And now he seems like he's got his confidence back and he's back to his best.
His progression's massive. I think at the start of the season, when you saw him on the ball and he'd go to scrap his man, your first thought was, don't do anything stupid, keep it simple. There was kind of that feeling that there was still quite a lot of raw skill there, someone that hadn't quite necessarily got up to kind of top-end championship speed. And then in a matter of weeks, he changed that totally. Then he had that hot run of form, and now you see him coming up against defenders, and you're confident he's going to win those duels, win those battles, take them on, beat them, make defenders look stupid, which he did countless times in this game, having two players on him at times and just breezing past both of them. I like the fact that he's quite shot heavy. And it's an interesting part, actually, when you look at Ipswich Ipswich, where they have been very shot heavy in the last few games. They've had loads of them and they've just not really scored. And I think a lot of those shots have come from him. But at the end of the day, you need to have someone that's got the determination to go and do those. I don't think that, again, like Sarmiento, in the same way, that it's not necessarily that selfishness. It's not that he's ruining chances by taking the shot on at the end. He's coming really close. He's threatening, forcing saves, curling some shots just over the crossbar. And on another day, those ones go in. And you might look back on this period as a really frustrating one, thinking, wow, I could have had two or three goals in the last week. But actually, when you look at it, it's just the fact that he's the lively spark there. He's getting into the good areas, and there's just so much to like about him at the moment, both as a number 10 and on the right.
Yeah. Well, the thing I like as well is how much he clearly wants to win. There's some great pictures of him kind of sat looking heartbroken on the pitch at the end of a game that they've drawn. For a young lad, he's so driven to win and succeed, isn't he? Which is not something you always see. Stewie, we've done half an hour on this game. Is there anything else you want to ask, talk about, opine?
I think it's a decent point. Against Middlesbrough in particular.
Yeah.
They're now undefeated in 9 matches, Middlesbrough. They beat Leicester back in February, I think. You've done the double over Leicester. They've taken a point off Southampton more recently. They're a team that finished really high in the table last season. Obviously, then was a massive rebuild, but we're always, I think, going to find their feet over time under Michael Carrick, and are finishing the season quite strongly. We know they're probably one of, if not the best counter-attacking side in the division. So facing them at home is a tricky task. Watford, similar, that picked up with their form recently, undefeated in 5 now, were undefeated in 5 before pushing Southampton all the way at the weekend. I get it feels like a bit of a missed opportunity this last week, but in isolation, I think those draws are okay. Why are we smiling and shaking our heads? Can you not hear me?
No, I can hear you. I was just grinning at Ross sneezing into his hoodie.
Okay. And I looked at it, the top of the form table for the last 10 games, Ipswich second in the form table over the last 6 games. Middlesbrough third in that, by the way, that form table over the last 10. Norwich second, the team obviously, sadly, that Ipswich didn't perform against and lost to. Obviously, I didn't see the Watford-Middlesbrough games, but from what you boys are saying, from what Kieran McKenna said, the performances were improved, back to looking like Ipswich-type performances. Yes, the goals haven't been there, but let's also take some positives that for a lot of the season we've been talking about maybe too many goals, too many chances being conceded from Ipswich. That's not been the case, even in the Norwich game, limited them, which is a good sign. So, as we said right at the very top, you only have to look at that league table and the position that Ipswich are in going into the last 3 games of the season. It's in their hands to get automatic promotion. That is, I think you'd have been locked up if you'd have painted that scenario only a few months ago.
Absolutely. And I want to talk about the promotion race in further depth just in a minute. Before we do that, though, let's hear. We've got one more clip, which I forgot about. Which is Kieran McKenna talking about Ali Alhamady. So just as a way of rounding off the game, clearly this is one of the narratives around the game. Let's hear what Kieran made of Ali's first start. Just pretend that I introduced that at the right time, friends.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic, I have to say. Again, I see a group where everyone's contributing. I see players coming into the team, knowing their jobs, being fit, ready to play a part. I see players coming off the bench having impacts. And that's a fantastic place to be. And speaking of Ali in particular, I thought it was a terrific performance, I have to say. For someone, we know where he's come from, what his journey's been. It's one thing coming on late in the games in the Championship, which he's done really well when defenders are tired, and he's shown his aggression and his running and his hunger. But to play in that game, the tactical level of that game, his pressing was really, really good. It was disciplined, it was intelligent. Some of his dropping down to connect with the number 10s was really, really good. And that shows massive growth in the last few months, because he wouldn't have, I don't think he'd have been capable of that a couple of months ago. So there's still loads to come from him, but I think he's showing that he can learn and will learn. And for a first start in the Championship against a good team, good centre-halves, I thought that was a really good performance.
Okay, there we go. So that's Kieran's thoughts on Ali and the game. Stu, I'm going to stick with you on the promotion race chat now. As you say, there's three games left. Town still have the destiny in their own hands. But, and I think this is really interesting now, they've got a two-week break. Now, this is something that I think could define the whole season, because by the time they next play, which is 8 o'clock at Hull, isn't it, a week on Saturday, Southampton, for example, would have played four times. Yeah. And the table will probably look really different. Now, I know you spoke to Kieran about this at the EFL Awards last night, because psychology now becomes so important. Like, we've seen in the last few games, haven't we? Teams that have previously been unstoppable winning machines have stopped winning and stopped scoring. And that's as they kind of tighten up, like a sprinter stretching for the line. They're kind of tightening up and slowing down a little bit. But the, for me, this next two-week period and how Town deal with being behind again in the race and knowing they have to win, or they have to do this, they have to do that when they try out on the pitch, that's going to be absolutely crucial how they handle that.
Yeah. Pressure does funny things to people. Just look at the Premier League yesterday.
Yeah.
Arsenal, Liverpool, both at home, losing games. Again, I stress that as a positive. Ipswich haven't won the last two games, but they haven't lost them either. And they've still got the fewest defeats to their name in the division. And I think that counts for a lot. We're going to know a lot more, aren't we, by the time kickoff comes around at Hull, 8 p.m. on Saturday, April 27th. The picture is going to be a lot clearer. As you say, that could be for better or worse. It might, you know, it might heap a little bit more pressure on if the other teams go well, or equally if they don't do well. Like we've just seen, sometimes you think, well, everyone else hasn't done it. There's an opportunity. You've got to go and win now. And that can add a bit of pressure as well. So, I think a big part of this is mental. It's psychological now, isn't it? When the finishing line is in sight. I felt this a little while back with Ipswich. They're so good at this being a reflection of their calm, collected manager and one game at a time and block out the external noise. That becomes increasingly difficult to do when the prize is within touching distance, when it's tangible, when players are starting to think that I could be playing in the Premier League next season, I could be lining up at Old Trafford, I could be playing against teams that I grew up supporting, my wage is about to double because that's written into my contract. All those sort of things start coming into the mind, and it becomes increasingly difficult to quieten those, that bit of chatter in the back of your mind the closer it gets. So it's going to be fascinating. I know there's the debate about whether this break is a good thing, a bad thing. Now, for me, I think it's probably a good time, because Ipswich have maybe in the last few games started to look a little bit tired, a little bit fatigued, maybe mentally, physically, with everything that they've put into this run. So hopefully they can just put their feet up and see, watch the rest of it unfold and come back refreshed, maybe with a couple of key players as well, with Wes Burns and George Hurst potentially as well. It could be massive additions. And it's just going to be an absolutely huge, mammoth, monumental, pick your superlatives, adjectives, week to finish.
It's going to be Ruthian for our American friends. Ruthian, in honour of the babe. AJ, Stu says it's a good thing, he thinks. What do you think? Because I think my calculations are correct. By the next time Ipswich Town kick a ball, they might be down in fourth, which psychologically could go one of two ways. And that's what makes me worried.
Yeah, that's definitely, we did in the build-up to the Norwich game, we did the devil and the angel on one shoulder each. And I think that that's probably the devil's side, isn't it? Thinking about, and this is now where it's going to come to psychological against physical. In terms of the psychological side, I don't think that there are pretty much any real psychological benefits, because the only real psychological side is knowing that, okay, you'll know what you're going to do for the last week. You know what you've got to try and achieve. But in itself, knowing what you have to do in a week, knowing that your season will be defined by what you have to do in that week, and that you're not looking at results elsewhere as they happen. These are games that already have been played at that point. That is quite intimidating. The one thing I would say is that I don't really have that many psychological doubts with Ipswich at all, because, I mean, we've seen them go to some of the toughest games possible, games where other sides have slipped up and other really strong sides have slipped up even, and they've gone and they've pushed all of that to one side and gotten fantastic results out of it. And that's why I'd more look towards the physical bit. It's the positive of having this break now. I think Leicester look tired, both physically and mentally. I think that Leeds look like they've started to run out of a few ideas going forward. That could obviously change. There's time before their next play, but it's totally different knowing that they've got to constantly think about the next game, the next game, the next game, and Ipswich now have a little bit of a break just from the promotion race in general. The games aren't easy either. Leeds, we've just seen how Middlesbrough are. They've got to go to Middlesbrough next. They've got to play Southampton on the final day of the season. Southampton, there's all this talk of, oh, Southampton are coming. Absolutely, they could be. But for them to now have to go again tomorrow, they're going to play. They're going to have to go again on Saturday. They're then going to have to go again the following midweek against Leicester. They're then going to have to go to Elland Road. That's exhausting. They must be, they're going to be dead on their feet by the end of that. So if they manage to take the points they need from those games, they deserve to go up, fair enough. So it's absolutely one of those things where, yeah, you have to look at Ipswich and the break they're going to get and the psychological disadvantages, but now is also a time for the spotlight to shine on the other sides a little bit as well. They do have a chance to start creating a gap of their own going into the final week, switch the pressure on to Ipswich. But in this little spell now, it's really, really tough for them, and there's going to be a lot of pressure on those sides.
I think you've talked about no fears from a psychological perspective from Ipswich. Of course, they've got the muscle memory of last year to call upon, being under real pressure to get themselves out of League One. And there was no margin for error, was there, going into those final games? Won 13 of the final 15, went to Derby, went to Bolton, went to Barnsley, went to Peterborough and won all of those games under immense pressure as favourites to get themselves over the line. And they did it. Completely different scenario this time around. And Kieran McKenna touched upon it last night when I spoke to him at the EFL Awards. He feels that the pressure is on the other three teams, as teams that have just dropped down from the Premier League. And I think they're feeling it from their supporter base. You can feel it. I was chatting to one of the Leeds reporters last night, and he's just saying how fans have turned quite quickly after some bad results. We've seen it's kind of festering a little bit at Leicester for quite some time now this season, and everything that's hanging over them. Russell Martin looked quite testy, didn't he, at Portman Road after their defeat. So, yeah, pressure can do funny things, and I think it's more likely to affect those other three than it is Ipswich, who I think really need to kind of... It's a balancing act, isn't it, for Ipswich to almost sort of embrace this almost as a free hit, as the underdogs, as if we do it, great. If we don't, no one expected us to do it anyway. But also having that kind of focus of this is a ridiculous opportunity, and we can't go into it just sort of thinking what will be sort of thing. So, yeah, I just can't believe we're talking about this scenario being in front of us. It's so exciting, and I think we have to kind of embrace the excitement of it rather than being sort of all consumed by the nerves.
Yeah, final word on this, Rossi. Terry Hunt wrote today that it's going to go all the way down to the last game of the season. It's going to be that classic as it stands, switching back and forth on Sky, wearing your lucky pants, praying to whichever deity you worship. Is it? You reckon it's going to be that way? We're going to be down to like the last half an hour on the last day of the season.
Yeah, because Championship is absolutely bonkers. And yeah, I can't wait for it. It's going to be really nervous. I have to admit, it's going to be one of those days. We're going to have to really prepare ourselves for any outcome. But yeah, to think we're in this position is unbelievable. I think we all predicted pretty much a high mid-table finish. I went 10th, and I thought that'd be a good first season back. But now we're thinking with three games to go, you could go to the final day. If we beat Huddersfield, we're going to the Premier League, which will be unbelievable. See, like the scenes at Exeter was fantastic, but if they actually go and do it, Portman Road is going to be an absolute party. Ipswich Town, get all the pubs, everyone, prepare yourself, because there's going to be a massive party if it does happen. But at the end of the day, you know, we're in the playoffs in terms of that's confirmed. So it's now for the boys to go over that line, to hopefully get automatics, potentially league title. But three big games to go, boys. Bring it on.
89 points, by the way, is now more than it's a record for a newly promoted team in the Championship. It beat Southampton's record, who obviously did back-to-back promotions. Was that 2011, around that sort of time, with Lambert and Lallana and co. I think it's the most any Ipswich side has posted at second-tier level in a 46-game season, surpasses what George Burley's team did in 2000. That provides some context to what this team has done. And maybe some of that went a little bit under the radar because it was a couple of draws that kind of got them to that points total. But it shouldn't be forgotten, I don't think.
I've seen, I don't know if anyone else has seen this on Twitter, where a fan has done a series of essentially predicting the next few games, and it has got them to Leicester 94 points, Leeds 94 points, Southampton 94 points, Ipswich Town 94 points. And for the promotion race to be coming down to goal difference and the title to come down to goals scored, which would be horrible. The weird thing is that the actual results that he's put in to get those, which include Ipswich win 1, draw 2, Leicester win 2, loss 2, Leeds win 2, draw 1, Southampton win 4, draw 1. They don't actually feel like they're that unrealistic necessarily. So fingers crossed we don't get one of those. But it does show as well, I mean, even if we touched on Southampton, they feel like they're a little bit out of the way, but there's so much still that can change in the matter of however long we've got left, 3 weeks in this promotion race.
I think Southampton's fascinating, isn't it? Because they're not out of this just yet. It looked like they were, but with the results the way they've gone, they're not. And we know what they're capable of with that club record 25-game unbeaten run earlier in the season. Yes, Ipswich have beaten them twice, but we saw at Portman Road recently that they're a good team with some good players. I think the hope has got to be that they stumble maybe once in the next couple of games. They've got Preston at home and Cardiff away, and then they can bloody the nose of Leicester and or Leeds. In the sort of the run-in, they could do Ipswich a real favour, aren't they? Could do Ipswich a real favour. And so you can just look. I'm sure every Ipswich fan has just been staring at the fixture lists of all these teams, working out the permutations, working out who's got the hardest fixtures. And I just keep reminding myself that for years, we got to this stage of the season and it was, you know, we'd be talking about, oh, maybe someone in the 23s might get their debut. That's something to be excited about, isn't it? You know, that's where we're at for so long. So just to be in this conversation is brilliant.
I remember that, Stu, those days where we were like, right, can someone write something about what there is to look forward to for the rest of the season? Yeah. Questions that might be answered by the end of the season as Town limp towards a mid-table or bottom-half finish. Just by way of mentioning it, friends, in a classic case of life imitating art, and it feels apt to mention it, in this storm, my back fence is flapping. And that seems to translate to this promotion race, because my back fence will certainly be flapping, I reckon, on May the 4th. Time will tell. Right then, let's draw a line under that, shall we, friends, and my back fence, and move on to EFL Awards, Stewie, because you got straight back from holiday last night, and as everyone does when they get back from holiday, you fancy going to a swanky awards do, so you got your black tie on, your dicky bow tie, I'm assuming, and went to a big posh hotel, and tell us all about it.
Yeah, no dicky bow. That was the first hurdle to overcome when you get one of those slightly vague emails about dress code. It's a black tie event, obviously, for footballers and managers alike. Working media was a bit more vague. You don't have to come in black tie, but you can if you want. Don't want to look like you're part of the awards. But
yeah, you also want to kind of be
exactly, and I definitely wasn't, by the way. I'll come on to that in a minute. But you also want to sort of be fairly smart. So yeah, business casual. So it's a real minefield with men, isn't it? Knowing what to wear to these sort of things. Yeah, Grosvenor House, West London, very swanky. Some ridiculous cars parked out the front. Black Ferrari when I first came in. And yeah, media stuck in a little side room away from things, a bit like Downton Abbey, the sort of workers kept downstairs sort of thing out the way. And as the evening went on, and it did drag on, it sort of ran over and over and over the run time. I think there was a quip, wasn't there, on the night about Kieran McKenna getting the award into stoppage time being quite fitting. And then they would bring people sort of through for various interviews. And yeah, Ipswich well represented on the night, so it gave us a chance to speak to a few people.
Yeah, so let's go through it then. So Kieran obviously won manager of the season, quite rightly. Wes Burns won goal of the season, quite rightly. Leif Davis in team of the season, quite rightly. Where do you want to kick off though, in terms of talking points? Because it seems to me there's definitely a talking point around only Leif being in the team of the season. And clearly you had an opportunity to speak to Kieran and Ashton last night. You also spoke to Luke Chambers, who picked up a special award. So where do you want to kick off?
Let's start with team of the season then, shall we? Leif Davis absolutely deserves to be in there. We've mentioned it, his record-breaking season of assists, 17, two goals as well. I think we were all kind of anticipating that. And then it was a bit more might one or two sneak in there. I think we've talked about, for me, the Ipswich's top three players in this order was Sam Morsy, Leif Davis, Plaidke. Could the other two get in with a shout? Hermanson from Leicester was the goalkeeper. Seen a bit of debate around that, whether Vaz might have got in ahead of him. He obviously has conceded more goals. I think Alex Palmer at West Brom would probably feel like he was a contender for that one as well. So that one's a little bit up in the air. Sam Morsy in midfield, that was a midfield two of Dewsbury Hall and Gabriel Sara at Norwich, who've both posted really good numbers. I think in any team of the year, they tend to go with the ones that have got maybe some more attacking numbers behind them. So, yeah, maybe Sam was in with a shout of that. But for me, the fact that Ipswich didn't have a player up for player of the year in the three-man shortlist and only had one player in the team of the year is almost sort of damning with faint praise, really. I think it's proof that, you know, we know that this is a team that isn't reliant on one or two individuals, players with X factor that can kind of get you over the line. It's a team whose whole is worth more than the sum of its parts. And I don't think I have any sort of strong complaints about it from that point of view. And Kieran McKenna certainly didn't either when I had a chat with him.
We'll contact you, of course. AJ, I've asked you to write a bit around your team of the season. So do you think Town have been hard done by in this scenario?
No, for the exact reasons that Stu's just mentioned. I think that when you look at, let's take the promotion contenders, but there are some other teams there. You look at them, Leeds, you think Crescencio, Somerville, you look at Southampton and you look at Carl Walker-Peters, and they're the names that really spring to mind. Whereas with Ipswich, I don't think you really have them, especially from an external point of view. I can't remember which manager it was, but one of them said, might have been a pundit, it was a little while ago now, but it was Ipswich are a team of no superstars. And I think it kind of got taken out of context a little bit, but it's absolutely right in the sense of saying it's not a team of kind of these real standout individuals. These are standout players who really just work in a team more than anything else. And that's what's got them to gel as well as they have. That's what's taken a team that is pretty much unchanged, with barring a few exceptions, from League One up towards a championship promotion race. And that's why you're looking at other teams, and the reason why I don't necessarily think they're running away with it in the same way, when you look at a Leicester and a Leeds, for example, is I do sometimes get the feeling that they are a group of extremely talented individual players. And sometimes I see that in a different way with Ipswich. So I do think that when you look at these kind of individual awards, especially with a lot of them being based on goals, Sam Morsy, he's Town's player of the season, but they're always going to pick someone like Gabriel Sara, who's got 80,000 assists, and Kieran Dewsbury Hall, who has got a lot of goals and low shin pads and nice long hair and all those kind of things. So that's what a lot of these things are based on. And Town are just a totally different team. So when I look at that, I mean, as I said, there'll be something on this later in the week. The one standout in my mind would be I would have Adam Armstrong in that team, probably over Jorginho Rutter, I'd say.
Okay. Stu, we're going to be putting out a special podcast, which Ross is going to be doing today, with your chats with Kieran, Ashton and Chambers. And I've listened to them all this morning. They're excellent. I think it's nice because it's a slightly more informal setting, I guess, than normal, isn't it? It's normally very controlled and kind of pre and post match. But particularly, I enjoyed your chat with Luke Chambers, because clearly Luke's not someone we've really been able to speak much to since he left. And it just really enjoyed listening to it, mate. So do you want to tell us a bit about that? How he's getting on with life?
Yeah, I enjoyed seeing Luke. I hadn't seen him since he's left Ipswich, and then I bumped into him. He was doing Sky for the Norwich game recently, so I had a little catch-up chat with him. He was aware he was kind of up for something on the night, but I don't think he was aware he was going to win it. It was genuine surprise when he got called up onto the stage. The award he got was the Sir Tom Finney Award, which is a kind of a outstanding contribution to the EFL, and it reflects his longevity in the game, really. I know he is a player that still splits opinion. You only have to see any mention of him on social media gets that. I think some of the dismissive stuff is a bit disrespectful, actually. I think he was you can sum up Luke Chambers by saying he was a fantastic servant to the football club in a very difficult period for the club. And I think now, in the fullness of time, most people should be able to kind of reflect on that in an adult manner. Played through injuries, played through pain, had academy players living in an annex of his house, maybe took on too much in terms of sort of the captaincy to the detriment of his own sort of form at times, played out of position for long periods. I don't think anyone can question his professionalism and his dedication. And I think last night was a chance for him to kind of really reflect on that. I'm always interested to see how players get on post-playing career, because some struggle more than most. It's akin to kind of leaving the army, isn't it? You're kind of going back into Civvy Street, and you've had this regimented lifestyle for so long. You've been in a dressing room environment, and some people really struggle with it. But Luke's got the personality, I think, where he's managed to cope and throw himself into a few other things. It was nice to see him looking well, and I hope that at some point, I know he was on a table last night with Kieran McKenna and Mark Ashton and co, and maybe there is some sort of role for him at some stage within the club further down the line.
Yeah, it was a really interesting listen. So, as I say, podcast will be out in due course. We'll also be bringing you written pieces around that. I thought particularly interesting, as you say there, Stu, with Chambers, was him talking about the sacrifices he's had to make in his life. And I guess we're always guilty of it. I certainly am, thinking of footballers as robots who don't do anything else. But when he's talking about, you know, I've not had sacrificed Christmas, I've sacrificed holidays, all this since the age of 16 to kind of get to where he got to in the game, it does make you think. So look out for the content coming from that. There is one more very important debate we've got to have before we close the show this week, and it's something that's captured the public imagination across the world, I would say, actually. And it was in last week's show, titled FFS, obviously, in the wake of the Norwich loss. We started talking about whether or not a hot dog was a sandwich, which has really got people going. First of all, Stu, as the adult in this particular pet, you're saying no. Why are you saying no?
Because it's not a sandwich.
Define a sandwich.
It's just a sandwich.
No, you can't get away with that, mate. You have to define a sandwich. A sandwich, surely, is bread with a filling.
Yeah.
So why isn't a hot dog a sandwich?
It's a good question, but all I know is I feel very strongly that a hot dog isn't a sandwich. Is it because the two bits of roll are not completely separated? Is that what defines the sandwich here? I don't know.
Well, we've had a lot of people jumping in. I mean, some people have defined it, as Ross did, by the way, last week, by saying, because there's no butter in it, it's not a sandwich, which is interesting for me. Could I take two bricks then and butter them and put a bit of ham between them? Is that a sandwich? There's butter involved.
If I was to have a hot... Okay, I wouldn't. But like, if I was to have a hot dog and put butter on it, would it be a sandwich?
Well, exactly.
No.
I mean, this is a face.
So there you go.
But I've had an official ruling, actually, from all the way over in Australia. John Deeks, who was actually a journalist I worked with back in the day when I was just a young buck, hard-nosed, young, skin-headed journalist on the news side of things. John was one of the first seniors who tried to tame me and failed completely. But he has said all the way from Australia, which is where he's now based, he says, a hot dog is not a sandwich, but it's nothing to do with butter. A sandwich requires two separate bits of bread and a prepared filling. A sausage wrapped in a slice of bread is just sausage in bread. But if you slice a sausage and put it between two bits of bread, then it's a sandwich.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that, boys?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yes. Okay, I think we've got to the bottom of it then. A hot dog officially not a sandwich, but if you slice the sausage and put it between bread, then it is a sandwich, a sausage sandwich. And there are a few finer things, I would say, in life than a sausage sandwich. Anything else to mention, friends? We've just hit the golden hour. We've conquered a massive debate. We've talked about the EFL awards. We've talked all about the promotion race. We've reflected on Borough. We've covered a lot of ground in this particular podcast. And I've talked about my back fence far too much. Anything else to mention, old friends, before we take our leave? Rossi, what are we doing with a fan social later this week? Is it happening? Can you tell us?
Yeah, we'll do one. We'll do one. Just give the fans, the listeners, more content as we exactly go into the final stretch. I do have two more things.
Oh, okay.
First of all, I just want to shout out to the Tractor Girls. They won 2-0 yesterday against Hashtag very good performance. Natasha Thomas scoring 150th goal for the club in 205 games. Incredible.
That's crazy.
So congrats to Tash and all that. And good win for Joe Sheehan's side. Second thing, just having a little look at this picture here. Stu with a fan. There it is.
Stu McKeown.
I don't
caption
like that
competition,
photo.
Anyone?
Where's that come from? Where have you seen that?
I asked for the first time in my life, I asked to have a picture taken with a footballer / manager.
Yeah. That's very unlike you.
Just felt very unlike me. But do you know what? I think Kieran McKenna is a man going places in years to come. And I thought now is a nice opportunity. As you say, it's a bit more of an informal setting last night. I think one or two might have had a couple of glasses of wine with their dinner, a little bit more lubricated. And I just thought I'm gonna ask for a little picture with Kieran. But it was taken very quickly. It's not the best angle. It's not the best lighting. Wasn't happy with it, but I put it out there anyway. So it was a nice evening last night. I saw. Shall I tell you a few people I saw?
Yeah.
I saw Clinton Morrison kicking off in the toilets because they were blocked and not working.
Oh no!
He was obviously a trainer.
Who's blocked the toilet?
Exactly. Who's done that? I saw Don Goodman and Liam Rosinia having a good chat. Again, in the toilets while they were washing their hands at this stage about the said permutations of the last few games. You've got Ipswich next, have you? Oh, right. Don Goodman having a little chat with him. I was having a little earwig there. And I also, most excitingly of all, saw Ben Shepherd.
was he with Cammy?
Sure what? No, he wasn't with Cammy. Not sure what capacity he was therefore, but he came into the media room to do something around the Fan of the Year award.
Okay, there we go.
Not sure what's going on there. And there was a lot of content creators based around EA Sports and fantasy football and all that sort of thing. So showing players their FIFA cards and asking if they've been disrespected in any way, shape or form. Archie Gray was in the media room a couple of times. He picked up Young Player of the Year in the Championship and I think Apprentice of the Year. He speaks really well, looks his age. He's a young man, looks very young as well. But, when he was told that people like Jude Bellingham and Gareth Bale had won that award in the past, I think that was a bit a kind of wow moment for him. But he's a player, isn't he? He's certainly one to, I think he's going places him as well.
Mm, absolutely. Anything else to mention from anyone else? I'm assuming you can't top toilet chat with pundits there.
No, I like how Stu looks a little bit like he's Kieran McKenna's bodyguard in a way in this photo. It's the stance and the quite serious face, the lighting as well. It looks really cool.
Yeah.
I can't remember what I said. Odds on the next Bond will be slashed after this. Not sure for which one of you. There you go. So always a chance there. No further business from me after that.
Speaking of business, Stu, did you have a favourite for most likely to block the toilet from who you saw last night?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Yeah?
Share? No, I'm not. another member of the media.
Oh, okay.
Ross knows. I'm going to say no more.
I suspect I might know as well. And we'll leave that hanging in the air. Ask Stu when you next see him, and I'm sure he'll tell you. Ross, anything else from you?
Or her,
yeah.
True. Not all good. Just going to enjoy this. Oh, you know, got now 2 week break. The boys, I'm sure they've gone on holiday probably and rest up and ready for those big three games. And yeah, bring it on. Can't wait.
That's worth mentioning, by the way. Neither Leaf nor Wes were there last night. I think Kieran's rightly given them a few days off, given there's no game for a couple of weeks. I think Leaf is away at the moment. Obviously, he's been playing through illness, hasn't he, recently? So, well-deserved rest for him. And I think Wes was due to be there, but he's a bit under the weather himself at the moment. I think he's got tonsillitis, so get well soon, Wes.
Superb, right then. 65 minutes in the book, 65 minutes of gold, I would say. We've covered a lot of ground, we've answered a lot of important questions, and we've talked about someone blocking toilets at the EFL Awards. That's what you get from the Kings of Anglia podcast. We're all things to all people, friends. Just a reminder, then support our sponsors, use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery on all that excellent clobber. Also, friends, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because that just helps lift us in the charts visibility-wise, which means more people can be brought to this show and get involved in talking about my back fence and toilet blockages, etc., etc. AJ, we want people to follow us on TikTok, don't we? Because that's where the cool kids hang out.
Yeah, exactly. We do. Follow us on TikTok at Kings of Anglia, where you're going to get lots of fun content coming up.
And maybe Stu will reveal the identity of the suspect.
Maybe.
But follow us to find out. Also, obviously, the old boy social networks, Facebook, X, nonsense, and Instagram, in that order of coolness, I reckon. Follow us on there as well. And also, friends, what else do I have to talk about? I've forgotten.
Sponsors and that.
I've already talked about sponsors. Just going to leave this hanging.
Just say goodbye.
Goodbye.